I'll be taking your legal calls maybe later in this half hour, 312-981-7200, as I normally do, and I'll do that all the way up till 5 o'clock. But I have a special segment now. The trial of Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer accused of killing George Floyd, is on trial, and Monday is scheduled for the closing arguments. Chauvin rested without taking the stand. Do juries make up their mind based on the closing argument, or do you think they already had their minds made up? Give us a call here if you want to discuss this with my expert, 312-981-7200. And with us to discuss this is one of the best attorneys in all of the United States. I've watched him. I know this. He represented former Governor Rob Blagojevich in his first trial, ended up in a hung jury as to most counts. He's an excellent trial lawyer, Sam Adam Jr. Welcome to the show. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hi, Karen. Hello. That was a wonderful introduction, but if you believe that I'm one of those best lawyers, you got to get out more, Karen. You got to get out and see more.
Well, as we just did the segment before of the Attorney Academy Awards, so I got to watch this week preparing for the show all of the great Gregory Peck and Tom Cruise and all of the people in the great legal movies, so so I'm extra motivated. No, you are a gifted attorney. I did go to the courthouse, and I watched you give the opening statement in the Blagojevich case, and you have a gift. You have a gift of connecting with the jury. You have a gift of speaking, and you have a gift of just saying the right thing. And I was very, very impressed by you, and I have followed your career very closely. But let's talk a little bit about the Chauvin case, and let's just talk about, just in general, closing arguments. What is a closing argument, and as an attorney, what are you trying to do?
Well, when I knew that I was coming on your show, I've been giving that a lot of thought. And to be quite honest with you, I take a different approach than most lawyers. In fact, I have arguments with lawyers about this. I'm a big believer that the closing argument in 99.9% of the cases is nowhere near as important as the opening statement. Excuse me. Opening statements, to me, are the most important. And the way that I try to do my cases as a whole is to have a theme and lay that out for the jury in the beginning. So by the time you get to closing, they're not only know where you stand and know how they feel about it, but looking for you in the closing to corroborate the theme, the evidence that was presented. And so tomorrow, that's what I'm looking for from both sides of this, that everybody knows the evidence that they heard and know where they come from. Now, how is that all corroborated by what they have seen? And that's what the closing argument it should be for, is to sum up and really give a corroborating tone to everything that they've seen so far.
I think you're right. That's how I look at it as well. I think opening statements, I think jury selection is very important. And, you know, and my jury consultants tell me that cases are won or lost based upon the people who come with preconceived notions, especially in a case with such high emotions as this case, where a lot of the jurors, and probably I would say all the jurors, knew about the case, knew something about the case before they sat on the jury seat. But I agree with you that the opening statement is the time that you kind of get to know your jury and get to know me, and trust me, and this is the roadmap that I'm going to show you, and trust me to tell you that I'm going to give you that evidence that I'm giving you a preview of. And so let's just say, you know, first of all, Chauvin didn't testify. I know you don't really like to Monday morning quarterback here, but do you think that was a wise decision from what you know?
Well, from everything that I've been able to see and read in this, like you said, I can't Monday morning quarterback. But if you're asking this jury to find you not guilty of everything, it's a tough sell to do that without explaining the minute by minute. Now, that was probably the problem that he had, was that he was going to be cross-examined, and they were going to take a second-by-second approach. There's no question about that during the cross-examination. And you can lose a lot. But in this particular case, I can understand why he didn't testify when I went back and looked at exactly what the defense is. The defense is going to be that he didn't cause the death, that it was the other contributing factors, that Mr. Floyd had drugs in his system that could have contributed to the death, that it wasn't the knee on the neck, but that was carbon monoxide poisoning that could have contributed to that, that he had fentanyl in his system, and that at the time in which he was going forward and being when he was combative with the police could have caused him to have a heart attack. And they actually had a witness, an expert witness, testify to those things. So when you can have that kind of defense, that even if you say my actions are the same and we can agree to what my actions were, I didn't cause the death, then you don't necessarily need to testify. You can rely on the fact that your expert says this and that the government did not prove me guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. You can lose a lot if you testify and they don't believe you. If you got up there and testified and they believe you, great. But if you don't, then it's over. You'll probably lose most of your count. And so I can at least understand why they didn't put him on the stand.
You know, and that's a really good point that, you know, the defense, you know, now that you're saying this, if you focus on that causation issue, what you're going to tell the jury is, you know what, you can believe what you want about his actions. You can like him or not like him. You can hate him for doing what he did. And you can think that was the worst thing you ever saw that a police officer did, but it didn't cause his death. So right. When you focus on that part of it, yes, you're right. You don't need the police officer's testimony. You need those expert witnesses who testified. Sam, can you hold with us and do another segment?
Sure.
Great. Thank you so much. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about closing arguments, the Derek Chauvin trial. And do jurors really understand and really believe that Fifth Amendment right not to testify? We'll be talking about that. If you have any questions for Sam Adam Jr., one of the best lawyers in the country, 312-981-7200. Stay tuned. We're here with Sam Adam Jr. He represents criminal defendants. He also represents people in personal injury cases, medical malpractice, civil rights disputes, and all kinds of other things. Sam, if people want to get a hold of you, how would they contact you?
Very simple. 312-SAM-ADAM. That's 726-2326. 312-SAM-ADAM.
Sam Adam. You know, you grew up with a dad who was a famous, bigger-than-life lawyer. You kind of grew up in the court system. Did you always want to be a lawyer? Was that always on your game plan?
People, I tell everybody, I never had a choice. My dad told me from the day I was an embryo, that was it, you're going to law school. So I never had a choice. I have to be very thankful to have my dad the way he was. I have to reach up to tie his shoes when it comes to being a lawyer. He's phenomenal, and to have that kind of mentorship has just been wonderful for me, and I can never be more appreciative of having a father like mine.
He was fabulous. He was a legend. They don't make him like that anymore, really, truly. Although you're doing a pretty good job, Sam. Doing a pretty good job.
Thank you.
So you trial these different kinds of cases, and I know you get this question a lot, but, you know, you represent people who maybe committed crimes, Sam. You represent people who are guilty of things. How does that sit with you? I mean, why do you do that? Why do you choose, when you can choose all kinds of things and different kinds of people to represent, why do you choose to represent criminal defendants?
Having been brought up in the profession, there's nothing more important to me than the American Constitution. And the truth of the matter is, and I tell my clients, I don't represent you. I represent the Constitution. I want to make sure, because I believe that government has the power and that government has all of the resources and can do what they wish to their citizens. That to have a judicial system where the citizens, the people, the individual get to hold and check their government. There's been no system like that in the history of the world up until the Constitution was written. And that's what we stand for every day. When I'm up there fighting, I know that I have to protect the worst among us to make sure that the best among us are able to do what they can to make society better. That if we allow government to come into your home and come in and take its citizens and lock them up, without probable cause, without proof beyond a reasonable doubt, then anyone who stands up to that government can be ripped from their home, ripped from their family, and taken away as long as they don't stand for the same thing government wants. And so every day that I fight for that, I'm really, truly fighting for the American people. And I believe that. I live it. It flows from me. I just believe so deeply in our system.
Now, the presumption of innocence, we all know, is there. And we all know that in order to prove someone guilty, it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And those words get thrown around a lot, so they almost lose their meaning. But do you think that jurors really can be made to understand what the presumption of innocence is and what the burden beyond a reasonable doubt is. And can you kind of maybe even just give us a little talk about how you say to jurors that they have to honor those two concepts?
Certainly. I believe with all my fiber that once a juror is picked, I've done, my father made me keep tabs when I first started. I've done 172 jury trials. And in each one of those, I can say I truly felt and saw nobody wanted to be on that jury when I first started. But once they were on, they take it so seriously. Once they're back in that deliberating room, they really take it seriously. They really feel it's a duty in every single one of those trials. And the way that I come out and talk to jurors about that is, like I told you, opening statement is where I think is most most important. I think it gets your personality out there. Human nature is not left at home when you're on a jury, that you have to understand that if people like you or like your client, they're going to listen to you. They're going to at least give you a shot. And so the opening statement can lay that forward, and people can say, all right, I'll listen. And then when the evidence comes in, they'll believe you. They'll trust you. If you told them that the trial was going to show X, Y, and Z, and then it does, now you've gained credibility. So in the closing argument, I always talk about the presumption of innocence, and I always talk about what their job is. And I put it this way. I look at them very, very sincerely, and I say, a lot of people don't understand about presumption of innocence and what the juror's job is. But your job and my job is the same thing. And you have to understand that, jury. Your job and my job is the same. We go about it differently. I cross-examine, and I yell and scream, and I wave my arm, and I argue, and you look at the facts and decide. But your job and my job is to make the state do their job. That's why this is so important. Whether he testifies or doesn't testify is irrelevant if the state doesn't do their job. The only time you get to serve your country other than military service is right here, and you have to force them to do it. And it's hit home many times in cases because they understand the import of that. They understand that the burden of the American system is on them. And if they find your client guilty, then the system works because the government proved it beyond a reasonable doubt. And if they find him not guilty, the system works because government wasn't allowed to take one of its citizens and lock him up without that burden put on them. And I think people understand that and take it seriously.
I do, too. And I haven't tried as many jury trials as you have. But I believe that in my heart. I believe that it's easy to say, oh, it's a whodunit. Yeah, he did it. So just, you know, convict him. It's easy to sit there in your living room and say that. But when it's you, when you are the person, one of the 12 who are deciding these things, it's a whole different realm, and I right. think that they do take it seriously. And you hear jurors, good or bad, right, at the end of the trial, say, you know, gosh, this was really a great experience, but
right.
you know, I'm not sure I want to do it again. That was a lot of responsibility. You know, most people walk around and they don't have that kind of responsibility in life, right? I mean, you might have responsibility right. over a few workers at your workplace, or you know, a few things in the home and children and all that. And all that's a lot of responsibility. But when you have the freedom of someone, it's an unusual responsibility, and one they don't run into probably, you know, more than once or twice in their lives. So in this case, Sam, we're talking about the Chauvin case, and Chauvin did not testify, and we talked a little bit about, I think you made some really good points about why he didn't, maybe that was a good decision. But as a lawyer now, you're going to have to explain that, because the jury wanted to hear him. They wanted to hear him open his mouth and say why he did what he did. How do you get around that? How do you tell the jury that this was okay and that they shouldn't take this and use it against him?
I went back and watched Friday when his lawyer was asking him whether he wanted to testify and running through all of the rights and making sure he understood it. And then right after that, in Minnesota, this being a state case, they have an instruction that basically says that the judge, when it's time to instruct the jury, will read to them account that Mr. Chauvin did not testify. He has a right to remain silent, and you cannot take that into account. And so what I think we'll see tomorrow is the lawyer and the judge asked Mr. Chauvin if he wants that read to the jury. And he said, yes, I want that read. So what will happen most likely is the lawyer will get up there and reread that or at least read it to the jury the first time. You're going to hear from his honor. You cannot take the fact that Mr. Chauvin did not testify. And here's the instruction. This is the law. And so that's how I'm expecting him to go about saying that to the jury, to get that concept out. What I have found in my practice, I typically in Illinois, it's up to the lawyer. I typically don't ask for that. I believe most people already know that and don't. I've learned sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. But most of the time, I don't like to highlight it because I'm usually focused on my theme and the state's failure. And to bring that up, it usually gives people, in my humble opinion, if they're against you, a way to argue or believe that, look, if he hadn't done this, he would have testified. I don't want to highlight that much. So we'll see how it works out for him.
Is there any way this case can be won?
In my humble opinion, I think that there's too much here against Mr. Chauvin that he would win every count. I can certainly see a compromised verdict. I can certainly see it maybe being hung if you have a few jurors who just don't want to convict. But the way they laid this out, where it's not first-degree murder, where you and the government does not have to prove that he intended any of these actions, but that it was basic negligence for him to do that in a criminal setting. That's a very tough burden when you sit there and look at 9 minutes and 29 seconds with his foot on his neck, Mr. Floyd saying that he can't breathe, the emotion of it. That's what I went back and looked at again, the pure and raw emotion of the witnesses who came forward. That's a tough thing to beat when you don't have to prove intent.
I'm in agreement with you. And, you know, as I've commented before, there was that other shooting a while ago up in the near Minneapolis. It was the woman who pulled out her gun instead of her taser. And I was being asked, you know, it's a mistake. How could a mistake be a crime? But when you're a police officer, you know, you and I go to a workplace, we might have an angry client, or we might not win our case, or we might, you know, get sued at the very worst. But when you're a police officer, you could actually kill somebody, and you could be charged with a crime. But even making a mistake could be some sort of manslaughter, a culpable negligence, which just means you're guilty of making a mistake and you're to blame. That can get you prison time. And so, you know, it's not a stretch to say that what he did would get him prison time under any facts.
The way I looked at it, I think he's looking at a minimum 12. Because they have guidelines in Minnesota, but we don't in Illinois, but they have guidelines there, and it looks like the guidelines would put him somewhere between 10 and 12 if he's convicted of third-degree murder and not second-degree.
Interesting. Well, we'll be watching it, and my guess, I don't know about you, but my guess is we're going to have a verdict by next Sunday.
I believe so. Well, by next Sunday, certainly. I believe so, yes.
I believe so, too. Sam Adam, always a pleasure talking to you. Always a pleasure. Sam, can you give out your contact information again for anybody who has personal injury, medical malpractice, civil rights disputes, or criminal defense matters? Sam Adam Jr., what's your maybe your email address or your website probably would be a good thing.
And it's 312-SAM-ADAM. That's 726-2326. And ATTY Sam Adam, like attorney Sam Adam Jr. at yahoo.com. Karen, I really appreciate you. Yes, I'm honored to be on your show. I love what you do. And if you'd ever ask me back, I would certainly love to do it.
Thank you, Sam. You take care of yourself. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. When we come back, we'll be taking your legal questions.